pass the peas like they used to say. Some MFers don't like how Sally walk.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name's Simon Welton, and coming up in the next half hour is a half hour of sketch comedy. That's right, it's the White Noise Show coming straight toward you very soon. And as always, right afterwards is the White Noise After Show, hosted by myself, and this week joined by special guest Connor Neckleput. Hello, Connor.
Hello, Simon. The stars and divinities smile upon me to have this chance to be here with you this evening.
Well, I couldn't get anyone else, but thanks for coming.
Yeah, I'm pleased to be here.
All right. So, yeah, we are going to have the White Noise Show coming up straight away. But just to remind you, as always, of all the tips that you can do to get involved with White Noise, you can check us out on Facebook at White Noise UBC. You can check us out on Twitter at White Noise UBC. And, of course, you can check out the best of White Noise all week at whitenoisecomedy.podbean.com. And of course, you're always welcome to send in your questions or comments on the show for the after show, and you can send them in to whitenoiseubc@gmail.com. Any thoughts, any insults, whatever you want to send them in, we'll read them out. But without further ado, I think it's time for some White Noise. Warning: the following programming contains adult subject matter and some strong language. It is a work of satirical fiction. All characters and advertisements are completely fabricated. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to another episode of White Noise. I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's episode is brought to you in part by Jury Service. Justice is having 12 unqualified people decide if you look like the type. First up tonight, Carl and Neil are back. All right, Carl, I've got a plan. We're going to make alcohol.
Awesome. I always wanted to brew beer.
Nah, not beer. We're going to brew gin. It's a family recipe. Not my family. I mugged a guy yesterday and he had it on him.
So, where are we going to do it?
In your mum's bath.
I don't want to get naked in front of you anymore.
No, we won't be in the bath. The gin will.
But how will I wash my hair?
With a garden hose, like a normal person.
Won't my mum mind?
Nah, we talked it over in bed last night. Alright, Carl, I think it's almost ready. I'm going to let you have the first taste.
Oh, that is so nice of you.
Calm down, I just want to see if it kills you.
Well, you have the antidote ready, right?
Yeah, sure. How is it?
I can definitely taste hints of juniper, citrus, and bleach.
Nice.
One question, when will my vision come back?
Your vision's fine, you just lent on the light switch. Alright, Carl, everything's ready. We just need to bottle it and sell it. Oh, why did the lights go out? Did you lean on the light switch again?
No, it must be a power outage. You got a flashlight?
No, what an awkward and generally unnecessary thing to carry around.
Alright, Sarky, I'll light a match.
Thank you. Oh, wait, no! Oh dear, will they ever learn? Let's hope not. That wouldn't be funny. Next up tonight, someone is making a change.
Mom? Dad? I've something to tell you.
If it's about what actually happened to the broken showerhead, we worked it out.
No. What it is that I've realized something. I want to be a man.
You want a sex change?
Yes.
But why? Do you really feel like a man?
No. I just realized being a man has so many perks.
What?
Oh, come on. You know what I'm talking about, Dad. You get the biggest portion at meals. You can fart as much as you like. You don't have to paint your face every morning.
I see what you mean.
Also, I won't have to feel ashamed of my mustache anymore. Or my back hair, or my treasure trail.
There are cheaper fixes than surgery for those.
I'm not done. I could wear death metal shirts without everyone assuming I'm a lesbian. I could still date men, but not without being called a slut. And I could ask people out without being assumed to be desperate.
Do you think they'd give us a discount if we both did it?
Being a man isn't all it's cracked up to be. I can't even sit alone in a children's park without suspicious looks. But maybe that's just me. Next up tonight, someone wants a child.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Fancy Fetuses. How may I help you?
Hi there. My husband and I are looking to purchase a designer baby.
Did you have anything particular in mind?
Something Gucci, maybe.
Italian? Really? It's so overpriced. No. I recommend the Calvin Klein. It's very popular, and it looks great in a diaper.
Might it be a bit vapid?
Possibly. How about a Rolex baby? It'll be very well engineered. But the downside is it'll probably get stolen.
It's out of our price range anyway. Any others?
Let me have a look on the computer. Ooh, you could get a Tommy Hilfiger.
Ooh, yeah. I always wanted to look like I can sail.
One downside is everyone will think your kid's a massive racist.
That won't do then.
All right. How about the True Religion baby?
No. Just no.
Oh, okay. How about the Lululemon? It's active, it's emotionally balanced.
The catch?
It's really, really boring.
Come on!
Okay. How about the Dr. Martin? It's tough, it's stylish.
But
after a while, it starts to smell.
No.
Fine. Let me see. How about the American Eagle? It's casual, it's comfortable. One downside is it's covered in unnecessarily large graphics. You're basically a human billboard.
There must be one decent option.
You could just have a normal child.
Don't be ridiculous. If we're going to invest 20 years of our lives in a human, it had better be a good one.
But aren't you both good people?
Good?
Fine. If you insist. Look, just take this one.
What is it?
It's perfect. It's a H&M. It's generic, it's inoffensive, and it's cheap.
Our perfect child!
I wish I was a designer baby. Perhaps then maybe my parents wouldn't have sold me. It's an awkward thing to happen at 13. Next up tonight, we return to Family Feudal.
people who brought you Rash Cab, Who Wants to Be a Miniature Bear, and Rustamind. It's time for a brand new episode of Family Feudal. And here is your host, Lord All the Money.
Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Family Feudal, the reality show where families must live as peasants in feudal England. It's a bit like being in the third world, but the weather is shit. This week, our contestants took part in a witch trial. Let's see how they got on. The O'Neills were up first. That's parents Eric and Karen, but without their daughter Precious, who was, of course, hung for pickpocketing last week. And serves her right. Let's listen in on the action.
I swear I'm not a witch.
Liar!
Look at that nose. It's a witch's nose.
No, I broke it playing field hockey, I swear.
I saw her disagreeing with her husband yesterday.
Witch!
Witch!
And she doesn't have any kids.
I had one.
One? What use is that?
Eric, save me!
It's okay, honey. I'm sure the TV people won't let anything happen to you.
Burn her!
Isn't there any other tests you could do?
Yes, but they aren't as fun. Burn her!
Things are not looking good for Karen. What are your thoughts on the situation, Eric?
Well, it's not an ideal situation, but it's still preferable to not be on television.
Honey, they're lighting the fire!
You're doing great, babe.
Well, I think we all know how this ends, so let's see how the Aldermans are getting on. The Aldermans, who currently consist of Mother Patricia and her one remaining, no longer conjoined twin, Liam, let's see how they got on.
Please listen, I'm not a witch. I'm just a poor single mother.
Witches are poor.
I'm not a witch. I'm just a crap farmer.
Where is your husband?
He died.
I bet she ate him.
Witch!
No, I swear. Tell them, Liam.
He's a man. Let's listen to him.
But I'm only 14.
That makes you a man here, boy. I mean, man!
Tell them Mummy isn't a witch, darling!
What will you do with my mum if she's a witch?
Burn her! Or drown her! Whatever takes her fancy, really!
But won't that kill her?
That is the general idea!
So, how can you tell if she's a witch?
Is she controlling? Demanding? Poor? Single? And does she go against the Christian Bible?
Oh, well, yeah, Mum's an atheist, so big tick there. Yeah, you better burn her.
Yay!
Honey, no!
Serves you right. That'll teach you for making me have a bedtime.
Oh dear, things are starting to look like Burning Man out here. Except everyone is slightly less dirty. Looks like this week is a draw. Nobody gets the prize of a week's worth of food and water. I hope they like the taste of pond scum. That's all the time we have for this week. Join us again for another installment of Family Feudal.
I think my grandma was a witch. She was always cackling, though that might have just been the booze. Next up tonight is a writer's Q&A.
Good evening and welcome to the Writers Off the Record, where nothing is admissible in court. Tonight's panel consists of legendary playwright and the bane of high school students everywhere, promoting his new play, Much Ado About Fuck All, it's William Shakespeare! Our second author is equally held in contempt by school children and is just as unfunny, it's Charles Dickens! Our third author tonight is the one and only... That can't be right.
Jane Austen cancelled. She's gone back to rehab.
Oh, right. Wasn't anyone else available?
I tried, but Salinger wasn't interested. He just kept calling us all a bunch of phonies.
Couldn't we have just left the chair empty?
Now I think about it, yeah. That would have worked.
Our third guest tonight is... David Spade. Okay, our first question, please. Yes, you in the large ruffle.
Hi, my question is for Mr. Shakespeare. Do you fear the name of the Scottish play?
You mean Macbeth? No, you see, I'm a writer, not an idiot.
Next, you, the short ass with the crutches.
Hi, my question is for Mr. Dickens. Do you think A Christmas Carol
help change how people think about the poor.
It would have done if the rich weren't too busy making money to read it.
Next question. You with the toga and a knife in your back.
Ciao. My question is for Shakespeare. Don't you think Brutus is a bastard?
Well, I portrayed him as a complex and misguided character. I mean, you know, he was manipulated by Cassius into portraying his friend Caesar.
So you agree? He's a dickhead.
Caesar, I'm standing right here, dude.
Shut it, Judas!
It's pronounced Brutus.
Next question. You wearing the rags and holding a gruel bowl.
Hi, my question is for Mr. Dickens. Did you enjoy the musical adaptation of your book, Oliver?
Oh, yes! That's what I thought a story about 19th century poverty needed. More dancing!
Next question. Can we have someone with a question for David Spade, please? No? Nothing? Nobody? Okay, moving on. You who looks like you're smelling a fart.
Oh, actually, that's my fault. Sorry.
Hi, my question is for Mr. Dickens. What is your favorite book you have ever written?
I'm not really sure. I don't really like reading.
Next, you with the arm fat. Oh, hang on. That's just my reflection. You, the gentleman with the unibrow.
Hi, my question is for William Shakespeare. Is theater dead? Everything nowadays just seems like garbage compared to you.
Well, thank you very much for being such a suck-up. But no, the answer's no. Every art form has its brilliance and its bollocks. And usually more of the latter, unfortunately. But that shouldn't dissuade you. I might have been killing it at the Globe Theatre, but at the same time, down the road, I was being outsold by assholes singing show tunes 7 nights a week. Art isn't dead. It's just rare.
That's all the time we have. Thank you to our panelists for coming. I apologize again for the inclusion of David Spade. My assistant will be promptly fired or shot. Good night to you all.
Apologies to Mr. Spade. It's not your fault. It's your parents. Next up tonight, the ordinary gentlemen are back.
I need a date.
Feeling backed up, are you? Do you want some of my prune juice?
No, a date. With a woman, preferably.
Why don't we try that speed dating thing?
No more drugs, Steve.
No, it's where you go on a bunch of short dates. And then you pick people you'd like to see again. And they match you with people who said they'd also like to see your ugly face again.
That sounds like a time saver.
And money. You don't even have to buy them a drink.
Won't they all be a bit young for us?
No, this is a seniors one. It's full of lonely women in need of company and a bit of rumpy bumpy.
Oh, I'm in.
What about Gladys?
What? Oh, I'm down.
But don't you like men?
No, I'm a woman who was born in a man's body, but is a woman, and I still like women.
So, does that make you a lesbian?
I don't know, I get confused myself.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you have 5 minutes for each interaction. Make a count, as that does include the time it takes you to sit down.
Hello, my name is Errol.
Hello, Errol, my name's Alice, or at least that's what the nurse tells me.
Do you have any hobbies?
These days, mainly staring out of windows, walking slowly, and crack.
Crack?
Well, I used to enjoy cocaine, but I can't afford it. Not on my pension, so I had to switch to crack. I switched to margarine, too.
Hello, I'm Steve.
Hi, Wait, what are you doing here, Steve? You said you were going to the pub!
And you said you were going to bingo, you cheating slapper!
Says you, coming to pick up some tardy trollop!
Hang on, who's watching the grandkids?
Shit!
Hello, I'm Ken. I'm 57, and I'm a millionaire investment banker.
Hello, I'm Deirdre, and I work in the chippy.
Oh, I probably could have started smaller then. I have an electric fire in my living room. With 3 settings.
I'm putting a tick next to your name.
Hello, I'm Gladys. I'm 75 and I used to be a geography teacher.
Hi, my name is Betty and I'm really short-sighted.
Nice to meet you. So what do?
I mainly enjoy complaining, but I also enjoy driving in the country. But lately that also involves crashing in the country.
Well, I drive. We could do that together.
Wonderful. And might I say, that is an unusual scent you have for a man. It's lavender, jasmine, and a hint of body odor.
That's a great nose you've got there. Yes, I refuse to be bound by gender stereotypes.
That is wonderful. I always wanted a man in touch with his feminine side.
You have no idea.
So how did we get on, lads?
I got one number and a slap in the face from my wife.
I got two numbers and a restraining order.
What did you say?
No, it's not against me. It's against that crackhead Alice.
What?
It's a long story. Ken, how about you?
Three numbers. And I only lied to one of them.
Not bad. And Gladys, how did you do?
No need to be embarrassed.
I got 24.
How? There was only 18 women here.
Some of them gave me their friends' numbers too. Speed dating isn't for me. I prefer sitting alone at home. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, starring the voice talents of Connor Neckleput, Sierra Wiley, Caitlin Docking, Ashley Fallis, Dor Tabby, Dottie Davis, and Simon Welton. Music and sound effects by Max Cheers.
Alright, there you go. That was the White Noise Show. I hope you enjoyed that half hour sketch comedy. Well, it was actually only about 20 minutes tonight. But, you know, time's a factor.
Time flies.
It always does when we listen to the show. What did you think of that one?
Well, really strong episode. I was particularly impressed by your writing, especially in the sketch about feudal England. You seem to know a lot about like the kind of atmosphere and the environment at the time and so the cultural idiosyncrasies as well. So I was just really impressed that you really managed to bring that to the forefront, very subtly though.
That's impressive because, yeah, I was pretty much talking out my ass the whole time, so that was good that it felt authentic. I guess I've watched a lot of shit movies that have shown what feudal England looked like, so you know, maybe that's what's wrong. Maybe all those years of history lessons have finally paid off when I can scream burn her into
Although I was a bit less impressed by the auth panel. I thought your representations of William Shakespeare and Charles Dickens were a bit stereotypical.
Wait, are you a Cassius fan? Is that what you're upset about?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not gonna hide my allegiances. Cassius all the way.
Do you know what's really interesting? If Cassius is played by a woman, which we did once when we did a version of Julius Caesar when I was in school, and it's amazing because it just looks like she's having an affair with Brutus and Caesar because the language is so lovingly anyway that between them that it just looks like she's banging everybody as well as being like evil behind everyone's back. So yeah, if you're
very Cruella de Vil.
Well, it was interesting because we did it as a film noir thing. So she was like the woman in red, you know, the sort of which all those that sort of genre had. So yeah, it worked brilliantly.
Stepped into the light, massive bag of condoms.
What?
Sorry, were you not just saying that you did a film noir with a?
I don't think they used that much contraception in the 1940s.
Yeah, but
this was pre-AIDS, man. They were just like, as long as you pull out, we'll be fine. Like, you know. Though I guess there was a lot of syphilis and other things going around. But was condom technology at that level at that point? Or was it just like a reusable stock?
Actually, I know this for a fact, that after the Manhattan Project, the scientists that were involved immediately switched over to discovering latex and therefore producing condoms.
No, you are joking.
Yes.
Okay, good, good. I was like, that would be a brilliant piece, but I'm like, no, that can't be true. That can't be. All right, we're going to play, we're actually going to play some ads, play some songs, and we'll be back with our chit-chat, as always, in the after show. So, go have a cup of tea, or the Canadian equivalent, whatever that is, and we'll see you very soon.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. The Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
All right, there we go. That was the lovely Cave Boy with Monochrome, and before that was Babysitter with Hard Times. All right, so we're in the studio. It's Simon Welton with Connor Necklepot on the White Noise After Show. My first question for you, sir. In the show, we talked about designer babies. Obviously, we weren't talking about the way we'd normally talk about designer babies. But I'm asking you about the real designer babies. Would you have one? I mean, this is a question that we will possibly have to consider in our lifetimes. Having said that, I mean, I don't think in the next 10 years they're going to have the technology perfected. So maybe this is our kids' problem if we had kids. But would you have a designer baby if you could? If you could design, like, you know, whether it's good at sport, good at, you know, academics, if you could tailor that, would you do it?
Well, I guess the question is, really, to rephrase it, is how much do you want to be remembered as a great dad?
Rather as
the dad of a great person.
Yeah, yeah.
Good at sports, yes. Intelligent, yes. Kind, generous, giving, yes. Politically active, yes. Inspiring, yes.
But the thing is, it's only genetics, which we know is only like less than, you know, is worth about 50% of what happens. And I feel like if you have these genes implanted intentionally, you then put extra pressure on this child to live up to these expectations, which are very high to begin with.
Which genes would those be, for instance? Because I mean,
well, if you say like this kid's going to be good at sport, that he may be genetically inclined to, but he might hate sport. He might not actually enjoy sport.
And so, therefore, you're implying that if you put the money into making your child better, have better legs or physically better, better metabolism, whatever, and then they sort of poo-poo that and they say, well, hey, I want to play video games or like I want to do
whatever they actually like.
So then they be letting down their parents who paid 5, 10, 20,000 or
exactly
$5.
Yeah, you know, it because again, it's parents living through children. You know, I mean, you shouldn't have kids because you've got nothing better to do. You know, you should have them for, you know, wanting to, you know, I don't know, love somebody else and have some sort, have the family sort of relationship that can be rewarding if it's done right. You know, if you have a solid relationship with your relatives, it can be a very rewarding thing. But yeah, I just feel like it's an extra pressure and it's unnecessary because, you know, great people can come from any background. They just need to be inspired and they need to be encouraged, in a very balanced sort of way. It's all about, like a lot of things, it's moderation, which is you need to push them and show them options and allow them to explore, but only if they really want to, or, you know, just encourage them maybe a little bit to begin with. But if they push back, you got to give up at some point.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think as well, in a way, it's sort of symbolic, not even symbolic, but actually in many practical senses, a sort of way to control your child by making them intentionally or making aspects of them intentionally. And yeah, again, adding on to what you say about that expectation, you're trying to design your own being. And as much as to every parent, their child is the most precious thing on earth and becomes their almost purpose for existence in a way, that's not the right way to raise a child. Every child grows on to be an adult, grows on to be an individual, controlled by no one in an ideal world. So by trying to implement that sort of control on that child, try to address the way that they need to or should look, and you can even argue it without their consent. I don't know how far that argument could sort of go. I think is this symbolic of the wrong way of raising or thinking about children, to be honest. And also, conceptually, I would imagine that there would be some genes that would become very in demand, which I would hope, therefore, wouldn't upset the rest of the gene pool. Because obviously, if everyone suddenly wants a blue-eyed child, or even white-skinned, most people, through various complex cultural phenomena, believe that having whiter skin is better. So you think back to like Aryan Germany, sure. But even people in Asia, sometimes like in India particularly, if they have lighter rather than darker skin, that's seen as a good thing. They're seen as more beautiful. So they're not always sort of connected, but around the world there seems to be this sort of
which
preference.
Is ironic because most white people are trying to get a tan all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So in a way, that almost goes to disprove it. But on the other hand, if everyone's saying, well, I want my child to be paler, then you could perhaps be at risk of losing out, at least in the general population of those other genes, which are important. Like, genetic diversity is incredibly important. But then again, you go back to it and then you say, well, are we even, how is this child being made? Is it through conception or is it through test tubing? In which case, the act of creating your own child, lots of train of thought here. but they'd always be there, so you could always mix and match. It's not as if one would just suddenly float away and when we go, well, where'd it go? I mean, they'd still be there. So that could theoretically counteract that. But yeah, I just think...
So you're going to say no?
And you know what? I like the idea of surprise. Maybe certain things, right? If you could change things to make sure your child was healthier when it came out, it was.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if it's about like stopping him having Huntington's disease or even mental health problems, like if you could stop a child from being susceptible, perhaps to depression and anxiety, I don't think it's terrible to not want those things in a child. And that could maybe be the sort of middle ground, is you say, all right, well, we only do it for health reasons and ailments, and we don't do anything else. But yeah, I don't know. But I think if people want to pay for it and they have the money, they can do whatever the hell they like.
And the newspapers will pay attention.
Yeah, and I'll give them something to write about.
Facebook feed will be filled with love.
All right, next question, sir.
Yeah.
All right, so we do a lot of we've been doing the game show thing for a while now. So I want to know, if you could be on any game show, which game show would you be on?
You're on any game show?
Yeah, any game show. What's it going to be?
That's a tough one. It's not really a game show as such, but QI, the English program.
Panel show's a whole different thing. But, I mean, we could have a conversation about what panel show, but... Okay, so
leaving apart panel shows, because I think QI, I love the idea of just learning, having a great good time with some funny people, making each other laugh, and then actually genuinely learning things in the process. I think is fantastic. But actual, so proper game show.
You're there for the prize. Where are you going?
Maybe Weakest Link.
The Weakest Link. You see, that's a tough one because you can be really good and then in the last round, the two lesser people can then vote you off because they know you're the strongest one, and that's what always happens. So then the two actual, the ones that aren't the cleverest end up in the final round.
Yeah, that's why I want to do it.
So you're like,
I'm never going to be the cleverest. I can scrape by with an answer too so I won't get eliminated.
That's
and then towards
idea.
Go to the end, I'll be like, well, sorry, Jenny, you're far too smart for me.
Yeah.
You were ruining my chances. No, I didn't know that the sky was blue, but it's relevant. I'm voting you off.
Yeah, ugh. Man, that must be an awkward green room after, because they've all got to go back to the green room after, and they're just...
Yeah. I can't believe that Gina voted me off. Like, how could she? She got three answers wrong.
Yeah, well, yeah, something like that. Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, because then they do that thing in the credits, too, I love, where, she's like, played really well, but, that other one, she was a bitch, and she voted me off, so what am I going to do? I think for me, I don't know, my first answer, there's some really good British ones that no one on the radio station is going to know, so I'm not going to name them, but maybe Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I feel like I like the pacing of that one. You can have a think about it. You got a couple of lifelines. Like, that's a good one to be on.
Well, until you get one wrong.
Yeah, until you walk away wrong, with, 200 quid. That would be embarrassing.
And Simon, you've got the first answer wrong. Congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know the nursery rhyme one. Bollocks. All right, we're going to play a song and we'll be right back.
Bound to discover, opening the doors, paid undercover. Too scared to peek, feeling like an orphan kid, hope it's lost to me, am I out of my bed, been here before, letting go of all direction, losing control, over my reaction, provide your life, disappointment steers this, all that you say, can't believe I hear it, you never come through on anything, let's just say that you'll do, it's time to follow you away from me. Somehow you lost it. There was nothing I could do. The spark dissolved. Or had it ever been? Is
All right, there you go. That was Language Arts. We're through. All right, we're back at the studio. It's Simon Welton with Connor Neckelper. And my next question, sir, for you is, would you do speed dating if you were single?
Like on ecstasy?
No. Speed's an amphetamine. Get it right. But no, would you have many little dates all in one night with many desperate people?
In this modern era, you have Grindr and you have speed dating.
I don't think Grindr's about dating. I think it's about meeting up for a very brief period of time and then never seeing each other again, which I don't really call dating. That's just
speed dating.
That's not speed.
It sounds like speed dating.
Well, go on Grindr. Tell me how you do.
Yeah, we'll do. Okay, I'll check that out. But I don't know. I mean, it's, you don't really get to know someone very well, but at the same time, you do get a small little spyglass view into their life. All these what they want to show you, much like a Facebook profile or any online sort of dating site. It's what they want to show you, unless you can sort of begin to sort of influence conversation more so.
Yeah, but that probably depends on you in terms of how well you can read people, and also
if you're blind, you're sort of stuck.
Who's blind? Well, someone.
I wear glasses.
Yeah, but you wear glasses. You're not going in with no glasses on, I assume.
Was that the condition?
Yeah, no, you can wear glasses.
Oh, but I don't look so good with my glasses on.
Is that your fit? Well, you can put contact lenses in, can't you?
Yeah, but I've forgot them.
Then yes, you'd be bloody blind. This seems like a very small.
I'm not actually blind, Simon. I can see a little bit.
Would you go speed dating or not? Answer the sodding question.
Yeah, sounds like fun.
Oh, great! Thank God for that. Wow, that was worth getting to.
Would you go speed dating?
No. I only because I have silly. I don't know. I would just call it like pride. I don't know. It's just that there's something in me. That's why I won't go.
I don't call it speed dating. I call it pride.
Yeah. It's like online dating. I can't do it. I feel like I'm failing if I resort to it, which I know isn't true. And I know it is a good way. But I have this problem. Like I went on Plenty of Fish once, and I tried to look, and every single profile I sort of went through, I'd find something in there that I was just like, no way in hell. Like it'd be like, and I enjoy country music. I'm like, forget it.
That's a man, and that's a man, and that's a man. Yeah, well, that's a man.
He's
definitely underage.
Well, that's okay. This leads me on to my next question, which is, would you date someone who'd had a sex change?
I feel like that's a very loaded question.
Not really. No, I mean, you know, I know that's, it's, I don't know. I'll tell you, this is my one sort of thing I'll put in before you give your answer, which is an interesting fact, which is that when they do a sex change, you have a surgeon who's designing a vagina, if they're going man to woman, and they are crafting it. So what you actually end up with a lot of the time is a very perfect vagina, apparently. Apparently, really? They look spectacular and very even, and, you know, the labia is very...
They look spectacular.
Apparently, they are, like, you know, very well done. So it's not like you're getting a second-rate product or anything, and that person, obviously, you know...
It would be virgin.
Well, not necessarily. You says you're going to be the first one there. There could be plenty of other people who've been there before you, sir.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just think that you can't rule it out that you could meet someone who's fabulous, and you know, maybe you don't even know at the time. And I don't know. I think you should leave it open to be like, yeah, maybe.
You saying that you would have an intimate relationship with someone who had a sex change just because they have a perfect vagina?
No, not just that. What I'm saying is, if that's the thing that's putting you off, I can rest assured, then that you know, that isn't a reason to say no. That's all I'm saying. Which is, you know, there could be a person out there who's perfect for you, but they used to have a penis, and that's not. I don't think you should turn them down for that. I think there's mitigating factors where you can find a very good person that way.
Yeah.
It's like the episode of IT Crowd where the boss dates a woman and he's having a whale of a time because they love drinking together, they watch the darts, they go for the chippy, they get pissed. Like, they're having a great time till he realises she used to be a man. And that's the thing. Like, she could be your perfect
your
woman.
Soulmate, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, because I mean, that asks a very interesting philosophical question about the necessity or the natural tendency towards heterosexuality, or even sort of along gender binary lines. I mean, like, a person could be your soulmate regardless of what gender or sex they are. So obviously, as a heterosexual person, I guess that the question is within those parameters. It would seem discriminatory to say no.
That's what I mean. It seems silly to cut off the option.
Yeah, I mean, like, it sort of invalidates all their experiences. And on one hand, you think they've gone through. I mean, to get a sex change, like, you've had to have gone through a lot of psychological sort of coming to terms with it. Potentially, lots of turmoil in not coming to terms with it beforehand.
Well, you have to live as a woman for a few years before they'll let you do it, and you go through hormone therapy, and you really do go through a whole transformation.
Yeah. So on the one hand, I think that does produce a very unique, I mean, also everyone's unique, but a even more dynamic person in many ways, which could be really interesting, just as a conversation, having conversations with them, there's a lot more to their perspective than we could ever realize, having being single gender or single sex.
Arguably, yeah. I just, you know, my major point is don't rule it out. All right,
I think your major point was they have perfect vaginas. Sorry, am I misquoting
you? That was just my first selling point. All right, let's move on. My next question, sir, would be, if you could, you know, we did the Q&A writers thing again, and I'm wondering, if you could meet any writer to do, like, your own personal Q&A with, who would you meet? Living or dead? It can be dead, if you fancy.
Bill Bryson. That's his name, right?
Bill Bryson, what did he write?
He's written a lot. He's written travelogues. He's written books on, actually, coincidentally, on Shakespeare. He's just a very I think, prolific writer. And he's a very engaging style. He can talk about it. I think he's done one where he's like hiked the Appalachian Trail and just recounts his experiences. Book that I read that was just literally Shakespeare. I'm gonna talk about him in written form. It's all very well researched. It's all very engaging. He's obviously very smart and sort of well socialized, well traveled person. He knows how to how to hook your attention. I don't think there's necessarily a major overarching theme in his writing, but I've always found it really good to get into. I find his perspectives always really fresh and balanced and well-rounded. So at the moment, I'd have to perhaps pick out him as my number one. Edward Rutherford writes a lot of great historical fiction, and I'm a big fan of that as well. So I think that would come in as a close second, because I'm a big fan of history. I like historical fiction a lot. So those are both not classics by any means. I think Bill Bryson actually might be a modern classic in the making. But yeah, definitely sticking within a more recent sort of tone. How about you, though? I feel like you would have some a writer or some writers that are maybe a bit more dated. Not old, but perhaps like 19th century.
Not really, no.
Main philosophers, perhaps? I know you're into that philosophy.
Yeah, I am. But I think if I wanted to meet a writer, it'd be a writer who I have been sort of infatuated with their writing for a long time and have had a lot of, you know, it's an important experience in my life. And so for me, one writer I'd have loved to meet, and unfortunately she passed away a couple of years ago, but she is brilliant, is Sue Townsend, who wrote, her most famous work is The Secret Diary of Adrian Mole, which starts out when he's like 13, but it's not a book for 13-year-olds. Like, there's loads of stuff in it because it's this kid writing a book, a diary, and so each, you know, the whole thing is done like daily entries with references to real life events, world events within that time frame. And it starts in like the late 70s, and the books go through to when he's like 35. She was still writing them just before she died a couple of years ago. And she actually went blind from diabetes, but still wrote by dictating books to her assistant, and you know, like, that was, and so she wrote some of those books while she was blind. But they're just so funny, because this guy thinks he's like an intellectual, and he thinks he's brilliant, and he's an idiot, and he has no idea what's going on in his own house. Like, his mum's obviously having an affair. So he's writing in his diary, like, mum wouldn't let me into the kitchen today because her and the neighbour were at a tricky point with the boiler. And he's just mad because he couldn't eat some dinner, basically, when his mum's clearly, like, banging the neighbour. And it's that sort of thing. And he's, like, infatuated with this girl who he follows to Oxford at one point. He has, like, different kids to different women. It's just chaos. But it wasn't just that series. She's written so many books that all have this same ability to just draw me in and make me laugh, you know, which there isn't many books out there that are laugh out funny. Yeah. The only other author I will give that credit to for constantly being that good is Kurt Vonnegut, who I didn't really know much about until this year. And I've read this summer like 7 of his books because they were all so good. I start with Slaughterhouse-Five. And then I ended up reading Jailbird, Cat's Cradle. What else did I read this summer? Hocus Pocus, which is really good. That's actually one of his better ones that isn't super well known. So if you do like Vonnegut and you haven't read it, Hocus Pocus is really good. So yeah, like I love that guy. He's brilliant. But Sue Townsend, I you know, it's just a shame she's already passed away because I would have loved to have some point had the pleasure of meeting her. But yeah. All right, I think we should play another song, and then we'll come back and maybe we'll do some more chit chat. We are nearly at midnight, but do you want to stick around for a bit longer?
Yeah, I'm going to tuning. Don't have anything pressing to do later.
Well, that's nice. You could have just started a little bit and carried on. You didn't quite have to make it so blatant, but that was a nice noise.
It was all very stylistic.
Thank you for that.
I'm more of a function of a form kind of person.
This is Young Rival.
Cross the lines a couple of times, Will. Come on. Sick of time of losing my mind, yeah. Roll on. Oh, what, huh? Did a line a couple of times, I find no place to go.
Like kings, our faces in the wind, and everywhere we were, we made the city sing. We sang for every young, we had our fingers crossed, and when the city sleeps, it dreams of us. Yeah, it still does.
echoes resonate. We need no photographs. The past, not only past, I find us everywhere, and that's how the magic lasts. 'Cause everywhere we've been, we have been leaving traces. They won't ever disappear. We were here, we were here, we were really here. And the rains get rough, but time can't wash us off. We were here, it was really long. Everywhere we've been, we have been leaving traces. They won't ever disappear. We were here, we were here, we were really here. And the rains get rough, but time can't wash us off. We won't ever disappear. We were here, it was really long. It's only little things, footmarks and fingerprints, treasure hunt through time. It's full of evidence, our monuments are all around. Everything's on the move, the paint is wet, all colors are new. But if you look carefully, you'll see us shining through. 'Cause everywhere we've been, we have been leaving traces. They won't ever disappear. We were here, we were here, we were really here. And the rains get rough, but time can't wash us off.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca. Experimental psych rock band Co-Pilots is releasing their new album Sunstroke on vinyl. Come out for a party on Friday, November 13th at the Biltmore for an avant-garde jazz, punk, psychedelic rock, noise, pop show with special guests Colin Cohen and the Elastic Stars and Calgary's Ghost Keeper, who will be releasing a new 7-inch for the event. Doors open at 7 and the show starts at 8. Check out Co-Pilots on Facebook for all the information.
All right, here we go. We're back in the studio. This is the White Noise After Show. My name is Simon Welton, and I'm still in the studio with Connor Neckelput. Just before, we just heard Boy with We Were Here, and before that was Young Rival with Where's It All Gone? All right, so my next question for you, sir, is you know, we had witches in our show today. So I was wondering if you could be any sort of mythical, we'll call them creatures, but, you know, it can be any of those sort of human-esque people or minotaurs, whatever you want. Which one would you be?
So we're talking about, essentially we're talking about Halloween.
Well, if, you know, you could be any sort of mythical creature. Because witches, dragons, you know, vampires, they're all part of mythology. So,
yeah.
Anything that has that sort of thing, you know, zombies, you could be.
That's a good one.
What would you be?
Necromancer. Sounds a bit lonely.
A what?
A necromancer.
Hang on. What is that exactly?
Well, it's someone who raises the dead.
I was going to say, it sounds very close to necrophilia. So I'm like, what is
yeah.
it? What's going on?
I mean, I guess you mean, to be honest, like, symbols that sounds like a wizard.
I was going to say a wizard. That was my
just
answer.
Because like, each one of them has their detractors, like, yeah, a necrophiliac, or sorry, a necromancer really is, like, very lonely and therefore conjures up the dead to throw some really crazy house parties, I guess. Well, I can't imagine there's much of a vibe.
Sure, yeah, and most people, when they're nearly dead, like, I assume if that's what they come back as, like, the people with cancer, terminal cancer, or the people who are, like, dying of things. Like, I don't think they'll be that party-ish when they get back.
Well, like, they might, because, you know, they might be like, whoa, I'm back.
But I'm as I was when I was nearly dead, so I'm feeling a bit rough.
So I'm
still
attached to a hospital bed, and yeah, that'd be very depressing.
You see, with the wizard thing, I'm like, you're basically human, but you can do magic. And I'm sorry, but how, you know, I've read enough Harry Potter. That shit comes in handy.
Yeah. Except against guns.
Except the what?
Except against guns.
No, because you put up a shield charm. Don't you read?
The one thing they never addressed in Harry Potter was the fact that the Muggles could just shoot them.
No, because you could just, you know, ASIO gun, and the gun's in your hand now.
ASIO gun.
I can tell you exactly which spell
to
use.
All the consumer.
God, I'm a nerd.
Imagine if you went to Texas when ASIO guns. you get smothered. You get killed by flying guns.
Yeah, just yeah. Or one of the yeah.
And then they'd go and strengthen gun laws.
Well, they just make sure that you have, like...
No illegal casting of spells to draw concealed weapons out of the concealment on Thursdays.
Or if you need to be on, like, the wand register, is basically what would happen, probably. All right, so my next question, so now we've settled it, everyone wants to be a wizard. Okay.
No, I want to be a minotaur.
You want to be a minotaur? So you're having, like, the top half is, like, the bull or whatever, and the bottom
half?
Oh,
no, definitely top half man.
That's a centaur.
Yeah, no, but centaur's a horse. Bull.
But a minotaur is like isn't it a bull on the top?
Well, yes, yeah, so it's a hominid with a bull sort of torso and face.
Because that thing with the body and the goat's body from
it's a satyr.
Yeah, it could be a satyr, but
except they're not very intimidating.
Yeah, and they're like they're kind of like the loser of the sort of
look,
Greek
I'm
world.
Just,
of
I'm
mythology.
All I'm trying to say is that you know upper body's not looking too bad.
You just want
a bull's lower half could be worse.
Fair enough. All right, so my last question tonight, sir, is there was one news story this week that I wanted to touch on, which was her painting by an Italian artist, I believe, Modigliani? I think, how do you say that name? Modigliani? I don't know. Anyway, his painting sold for $170 million to a billionaire. It's a nude painting. It's not a bad one. I mean, it's all right.
Has a perfect vagina.
No, well, there's a bit of bush. Yeah, do you want to see it? I'll show you. There, come right. You can have a look at it if you want. But yeah, that was the painting. Someone paid $170 million. So my question for you, sir, is would you pay, not that much, but would you pay an absurd amount for like a painting? Would you, if you had the money, would you be there bidding at... the auction for
I
that
think,
kind of thing?
I think art is interesting, and art trading and buying and selling, because it really is putting a price on an individual's experience. And even as that painting or that piece of art, sculpture, or a building in terms of architecture becomes repossessed by different people, I think it actually gains a history of itself. Besides what the image is, I think it actually gains a certain... I mean, an aging, of course, but its own sort of another dynamic story that's even more than just what the author intended.
Yeah, but if it's pre-war, if it's pre-World War II, they've all got the same story, which is it was stolen by Nazis at one point.
And then I bought it.
Yeah, from some bloke in Switzerland.
Yeah, that's a good point. But you think like 170 million? Obviously, it's all relative. I mean, to a billionaire, regrettably, 170 million is like some spare change.
I'm sure he thought about it a little.
Well, yeah, everyone went, 100 or 170? Difficult decision. Well, that Juan guy over there is bidding 150, so I better up him. But it's interesting because, I mean, how do you put a price on one's experience with something? And even something that isn't their own. I mean, you could almost conceptualize it of a sort of love. Something that was never meant for you or that was never made with an intention for you particularly to own it, but you still manifest your own experience and adoration and love for it that no one else can possess in the same way you do. I think does touch on a very sort of humanist kind of theme. Do you ultimately justify that with price tags? No,
right.
I don't think that's proper. But you know, it's much like marriage. I mean, like, would you give 170 million to marry the woman of your dreams? I would like to think not. But at the same time, if I had a couple billion, and she was the one, like,
then if she's the one, you shouldn't have to bloody buy her. Is my thought on that one.
But she doesn't know she's the one yet.
Then you're doing something wrong if you've got that kind of money and you still have to throw 170 million at her to get her attention. But my thought on this whole thing is there is so much good art out there that doesn't cost 170 million. You could even for 100,000, I bet you can buy some sodding great art, and you could probably get most artists alive today to make something for you for 100,000 if you wanted
that,
to.
Yeah.
And that is so much more personal then. But even then, I don't think you should do that because, you know, that's maybe, it's a bit like, you know, artists being commissioned to do stuff then perhaps would take away from their own sort of personality in the product if you're manipulating what it's going to be.
It includes a sort of a bureaucracy of sorts, a committee. It spoils the artist's
vision.
That's
what I'm saying. It doesn't come necessarily from them then. But I do think that if you buy something directly from an artist, that has much more personal value then and has more of a story, hopefully, for you than it would if you bought something that is seventh hand and, yeah, is by a prolific painter and everything. But I don't know. I just think that kind of money for something like that just is disgusting, really. You know, it's a bit like going when you go into massive hotels for, like, you know, high-end places and they've got huge vaulted ceilings and just so much ostentatious nonsense everywhere. And it makes me feel a bit nauseous because I just think, what a massive waste of money. You know, I don't, you know, I just feel like, what is the point? Like, what are you saying except that, yeah, I can afford to live in a bit of a wanky place for one night a year, like, when you stay there? Like, I don't know. To me, it's just, like...
Well, that's interesting, though, because, I mean, you look at, therefore, perhaps something great, architecture, churches, La Sagrada Familia in Barcelona is an absolutely amazing building.
Yeah, that's different, though, because that is art in itself. I'm talking about going to the West Inn in Whistler, and, you know, I'm not talking about something Gaudi made. You know, that's a whole different ball game. Like, yeah, like,
but where does it differ, really?
Because what Gaudi was building was a religious building. It was his, like, I believe the idea was it was, like, you know, his sort of worship to God, in the same way that when Michelangelo made the Sistine Chapel, like, it's that same thing where it's like it's a homage to God, basically. Like, so
wasn't Michelangelo atheistic?
No, didn't you look at his paintings? All his paintings.
Yeah, I thought his paintings were subtly very anti-religious.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Unless you mean because he drew all the cocks really small, maybe that was him being really anti-religious. But I generally think
that was his insecurity.
He's like, well,
I should model it after myself.
Yeah, that's it. He's like, if I make it really small, then my girlfriend, she'll be surprised afterwards. You know, it's good, not a bad tactic.
Lowing, and they will never knock off the penises.
Oh dear. Okay, well, you know, I think it's time. We're gonna play one more track. We'll come back for a little more chat, and then we will have to piss off. But yeah, coming up right now is the Fratellis. All right, that was the Fratellis with Boys, Don't You Lie to Me. All right, we're in the studio.
Great band, great live. They came to Vancouver recently.
Oh, yeah, you saw them, didn't they? It was good.
Great, had a really fun time. I mean, they're very energetic. You can't understand a word they say because they're from Glasgow.
Yeah, they're all Scottish.
When they're speaking. But the music is this, yeah, just get you dancing, just get you having a good time. Yeah, a lot of good fun.
Nice.
Definitely worth seeing.
You know, it's one of those things, like, all shows, I think, should have energy because you got to make it exciting. Otherwise, people are going to fall asleep.
To Death Cab for Cutie once.
Did you fall asleep?
Nice band. No, I just went home in the end. Like, it's nice music, but like, really, it's not concert music. If I want to go to concert, I wouldn't be able to dance. I wouldn't be able to get up, enjoy the mood. Mm. I just sit there, kind of nodding my head a bit. Like, the song's good, but I just, why am I there doing it?
Yeah,
I can dance at home, but I'd like to dance with other people. To sit and just kind of nod my head quietly with other people, that's pointless.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Though I think some people just, I don't know, like being outside the house. But anyway, my question for you is actually one Connor himself came up with. Good for you, Connor. If you were in feudal England, as we've talked about in the show, what would be your preferred profession at the time?
Profession. I thought it's a pronoun. Profession. Well, I mean, so ignoring like being a king or a lord, something sort of. That takes you out of that a little bit. So putting you right in the heart, if you're maybe some sort of courtier, maybe like a herald, just someone with a big trumpet goes around annoying people. basically, it's his life.
That seems like a pretty safe job.
Yeah, well, until you kill the messenger.
Yeah, or you're like in charge of.
My
doing
lord
that
has
at
declared war on you, Sir Lord. Yeah. Should I tell him what you want me to tell him? Should I tell him to bugger off for you?
I think I would have been I'd have been a blacksmith. I think that'd be good.
Why?
Know? Well, it's you know, constant work, get to meet lots of people, but like,
get big muscles.
Yeah, and you like slamming metal all day.
Yeah, sizzle shit.
Yeah, like, you know, I feel like that's
smack some ass.
That's some good satisfying work. You know, you get to make a product at the end. You can make all sorts of things.
You can market it. You could sell it. You could become a conglomerate if you really put your enough energy.
Yeah, I could hire other, you know, you could make a whole you couldn't make capitalism because it's feudal age, but you could make a whole business and then give all your money to the sodding lords,
could just be the court magician.
Yeah, I feel like that's a job that gets you hung if you bugger it up. You know, you drop a few too many balls because you're hungover and suddenly you're on the stocks, you know, for heresy. All right, well, our last question of the night, sir, is I know this is kind of a silly question to ask now because a lot will happen between this point and the point I'm talking about. So this is why I phrased it this way, which is, what would you do in retirement if you had to decide right now?
What in retirement with a pension, sort of?
Yeah, like
not
what,
retirement
what,
home, but just
yeah,
like,
I'm just curious no, because you know we have on our show, of course, the old ordinary boys or ordinary gentlemen, rather,
the League of Ordinary Little Boys,
and they are all retired and they just kind of hang out in the pub and try and shag women
in the pub,
basically. While speed dating, and yeah, so like that seems a bit depressing to me if that was your final days, was just pissing around in a pub.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean,
so what would you do?
Well, of course, it depends on your age, but let's assume 60.
Yeah, let's pretend you're 65. You're somewhat economically stable, and you can.
I would love to keep traveling. You know, just because I know some people, some family friends of mine or my family's, who are retired now, and their kids have gone off to university or now making a life for themselves, and they get a bit quid, and so then they go traveling, and it's brilliant, and they always come back with amazing stories, and it just makes them so much happier to be experienced in the world, especially in like the last kind of throes of life as we interpret it, sort of to really go out and really experience what you want, how you want it, whether it's a little bit edgy or like, kind of nice and plushy in a nice hotel, whatever. But just the ability to not sit at home every day and just drink the same tea and talk the same bollocks.
Yeah.
But just be able to go out and able to experience. I mean, yeah, again, consider if you're healthy enough, if you can really, if you physically do it. It's great because it really keeps your mind active. It keeps your senses alive.
Yeah.
And I think it re-inspires. I mean, in between two people, like adventure often inspires passion and connection. And I think you know when you're not doing much, that's when stagnation seeps in. So when you go out and you adventure, that's when you form a closer bond with your partner as well.
Yeah, and it's probably stimulating as well, which is good for your health. You know, just having to learn new
exotic
things and problem
sexes.
Solving. yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because my answer's kind of similar. But it really, it's not even what I want to do when I retire. It's what I'd love to do in about 10 years' time, which is earn enough money that I can work from my computer, writing, hopefully, and then just sail all the time and just sail constantly and just go explore and basically be a pirate. It's basically what I'd love to do, just be a pirate.
Wouldn't that, actually, that would be amazing inspiration. So imagine that you actually become like a pirate of sorts and you go and you hijack some ships.
I'm not, yeah, then, I don't mean hijack anyone. I just want to sail around
let me
looking
finish,
like Jack Black.
You're going to hijack some ships, Captain Phillips style, and then you can let them all go and explain to them there's a little bit of a lark, and then you're going to go type that back up. And you're going to... Because the whole time is going to be really quite humorous, actually. Not to them, because they're being like,
yeah, I just feel like I'm tormenting people for my writing
gonna,
research.
But yeah, but you're going to embody new characters every time. You're going to form new characters for yourself. Every situation, you're going to invent some sort of elaborate way that you hide at the boat or some sort of method of torture that, you, of course, you never actually use, but just to scare them. And then you're going to write that, and you use their genuine emotion to help influence your characters. And you end up writing the modern pirate's handbook for someone who just wants to fuck about.
Yeah, I do feel like that's going to land me in jail or get shot by, like, the French Navy. Like, have you ever seen those videos of them, like, just basically like, shooting pirates from the helicopters?
If you're in a yacht, no one's going to shoot at you.
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
You'd be very surprised when you in a yacht hijack a cargo ship.
I just love that line in South Park where they're like, yes, a French ship has been hijacked. They're like... Did they give up? He's like, well, yeah, they're French. Of course they gave up straight away. All right, that is unfortunately the end of our time today. We do have to eventually go to bed. So we'll be back next week, 11 p.m. as per usual, with brand new music, brand new comedy, and of course a bit of nattering afterwards. Connor apparently is already asleep.
Who do you want? What?
Thank you for being here and that fabulous acting to end the day. I was so convinced he was asleep there. All right, so we'll be back. Hopefully you'll join us next week again. Otherwise, have a lovely week. Connor, try not to kill yourself with your pretend sleeping. So the last song we're going to play tonight is Destroyer with Dream Lover.
Dream Lover!
That is not how it goes.
Love is on the